9 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good morning, Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am excellent. Pam Colleen joins us on Tuesdays. She is our nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate. And how was your week off?
Oh, well, I mean, I stay busy, Tom.
Oh, okay. I had the week off. But you had the week off from us.
Oh, yes, that's right. You were the busy one.
I was the one with the week off. Now, I got a couple of interesting news stories we'll get to a little later on, only because this, I guess, confirms a lot of what you say. One, there's a health story out this morning that says fatty foods, especially fatty acids, help us reduce anxiety and ease sad moods. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. And omega-3s reduce inflammation and anxiety in healthy young people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those two news stories we're going to get to in a bit. But first, you have a book, The Addiction Epidemic, where you write about our modern day mental health challenges, mm-hmm. chief among them addiction and addictive behaviors, and how it's tied into nutrition or lack thereof. And I thought, in light of the death of Amy Winehouse and what a public battle she had with her addictions, I thought it would be a great chance for us to reflect on what you write in that book and how you tie our nutrition and our food intake into our, I guess, you see it as an epidemic, this massive increase in mental health problems.
Oh, it's our number one health problem. Substance abuse is our number one health problem. There are more deaths and disabilities from substance abuse than from cancer, heart disease, diabetes, etc. It's an absolute catastrophe. And I wrote this book as a call to action because I look around me and I read these stories in the papers about, you know, what's happening with celebrities, and that's just a manifestation. That's just a symbol of what's going on within society today. And each and every one of these deaths is tragic. It doesn't matter if one is a celebrity or not. I mean, this should not be happening. And if you look at the story of Amy Winehouse, you see that, you know, she's been in rehab, I think, about six times. This is not uncommon for people to continuously go to rehab and not get results, essentially. You know, they instead of really looking at the biochemical problems that are underlying the cravings, underlying the mood disorders, you know, they use talk therapy, essentially. And talk therapy is just simply not enough to deal with mood disorders and addictions.
So they're looking at the psychological reasons, but you're looking at the biochemical reasons. And in fact, maybe the biochemical reasons are linked to the psychological. I mean, when we go to the news stories today, omega-3 reduces anxiety. Mm-hmm. I mean, fatty acids reduce depression. I mean, here are two recent news stories where it's like, hey, look, when we increase the consumption of fatty acids, people are less depressed. Or when we increase the consumption of omega-3 fatty acids, young people suffer less anxiety.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is, you know, this is really common knowledge. But within the therapy field, within the addiction field, they're not connecting the dots. And essentially, you and I are lay people, and we're figuring this out. But unfortunately, within the system, they really rely on both pharmaceutical drugs and talk therapy. And you can't. I mean, you're going into rehab to come off of drugs. And unfortunately, what they do is they put people on drugs in many of the facilities, not necessarily all of the facilities, but many of the facilities today. And these mood-altering drugs are still not addressing the underlying reasons why people have cravings in the first place. You simply, the other modality they use, of course, is talk therapy, and you simply can't talk somebody out of an addiction. It's impossible when they're fighting with nutritional deficiencies and toxicities.
Now, what do you see as, in your book, you write about what is your biochemical root for addictions and mental health problems? I mean, I guess doctors can say, well, you know, in the case of depression, it's not enough serotonin is being created. Mm-hmm. But in the case of addiction, what's going on? What are the cravings? What's happening in the brain?
What happens is it's not necessarily happening within the brain. It's through the whole body. Okay, so the brain is connected to the rest of the body, and so what I do is I look at the regulating people's blood sugar, which has an influence on their adrenal glands, which has an influence on their thyroid glands. So all of these systems need to be corrected. Another system I work on helping people improve is their digestion, because your gut is your second brain. And, of course, if you're not digesting or breaking your food down properly, of course, you're going to form a lot of poisons and a lot of toxins in your gut, and you've got to regulate that in order for the brain to function properly. And, you know, it takes a long time for me to work with people to restore their biochemistry, but it's well worth it because, you know, in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, I can see and they can feel improvements in their moods. They can feel improvements in their energy levels and their sleep patterns and so on as they gradually start improving their biochemistry. So in my case, what I witness is cause and effect. I see people get better. I love what I do. But unfortunately, there's no money to be made in getting people well. You know, this is the tragedy. This is the frustration.
What do you mean by that?
That I see.
What do you mean by that? That there's no money to be made in getting people well?
Well, you know, from the top down, the way I look at it is the food industry wants us addicted, the drug industry wants us addicted. The more that we're buying their products, the more money that they make. So the knowledge that I have and the people that I feature in my book have is really not being well embraced by the addiction fields, the therapy fields, the psychology fields. You know, this is something that they are not looking at, which is, if you want to call it nutritional psychology, you can call it that. But it has to, I don't see how we can ignore this as a component of mental disorders today and addiction. We must start looking at nutrition simply because this epidemic is going to get worse. What we see with Amy Winehouse, what we've seen with Michael Jackson, with Heath Ledger, Lindsay Lohan, I mean, what we're seeing with the celebrities today is just the tip of the iceberg. This problem is going to get worse. More people are going to lose their hopes, their dreams, their families. They're going to lose their lives unless we look at the core problem here, and that has to do with the biochemistry.
Pam Colleen's our nutritional consultant, joining us on Tuesday. We're talking about, she wrote a book called The Addiction Epidemic, and it's available in chapters over at the Fairview Mall. You can get it there.
It's actually called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic.
Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. There you go. Normally I have it right in front of me, but for some reason I don't today. So Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. And when we come back, we'll talk more about what's going on biochemically in our bodies and why we have seen this rise over the last number of decades, and why Pam thinks it'll continue, but how we can reverse it, how we can change our nutrition and change what we take in to get better results. 17 minutes after 10 o'clock, my name's Tom McConnell. You're listening on 610 CKTV. 21 minutes after 10 o'clock, Pam Colleen, nutrition consultant, healthy living advocate, joins us on the program on Tuesdays. And in light of Amy Winehouse's death, and because she had such a public battle with her addictions, and because Pam wrote the book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, I thought, you know, we touch on that book again. And Pam, over the last number of decades, what's changed in our diet that you think we've seen such a rise in all these mental disorders?
Well, one of the main things we've seen happen is this low-fat diet. And unfortunately, in order to stabilize our blood sugar levels, in order to feed our brains properly, we need animal fats in our diet. And when you look at Amy Winehouse and you see some of the stories, even dating back to 2008, where, you know, people were saying she was a fussy eater, that she had an eating disorder, she has a lung condition, emphysema, and, you know, your lungs absolutely need saturated fat from animal foods. You know, we need to have very particular nutrients in order to support our whole body systems. And she sounded to me like she was brain starved, and that would have set her up, you know, unfortunately, for mood disorders and cravings and addiction. So I see the patterns, but unfortunately, the people who were surrounding her, the experts in her life that were trying to help her, they didn't see those red flags. You know, when I see somebody who's a fussy eater, I see a huge red flag. You know, this is just not natural to be a fussy eater. When we are given food as a child, we should eat the food off the plate. We conditioned to eat everything we're given. And when I see children who are fussy eaters, to me, I say, you know, parents need to be diligent. They need to make sure that the child is eating properly, eating what they're given, eating 3 square meals a day in order to properly set the brain up for better mental health.
You know what? There's a couple of interesting, maybe it's, I'm trying to think of the word, but maybe the public, and maybe you can explain it as well. When we hear terms like blood sugar, but you talk about fat. Mm-hmm. And then when we hear about, you know, well, I don't want to eat fat because I don't want to get fat. But what leads us to get fat is starches, which are made of sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that people relate blood sugar and it's like, well, her blood sugar, so I should eat sugar or starches. Versus you're saying, no, fat regulates blood sugar. And if mm-hmm. you eat sugar, it makes you fat.
Right.
Where we get this misinformation.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to create really, really high spikes and lows in your blood sugar levels. That is very, very stressful on the body, and that can lead to even things like brain damage. You know, they've done autopsies back as far as the 1920s to see that people with hypoglycemia or poor blood sugar control, if you will, that they have actual brain damage from eating too many sugars in their diet. So what's the opposite of that, of course, is stabilizing blood sugar levels by eating enough animal fat in the diet. And that's what we did prior to World War II. Prior to World War II, we didn't have fat phobia, cholesterol phobia, meat phobia, butter phobia. You know, we didn't have any of these types of food phobias. We sat down and ate 3 square meals, and those meals were comprised of adequate amounts of animal fat, and that's what regulated our blood sugar. And I have medical texts that date back into the early 1940s, before our diets became a low-fat diet. And even in the medical schools, they were teaching that you should get about 70% of your calories from animal fat.
And why did we abandon that? What changed after World War II that led our diet to be so, lacking in nutrients for the rest of our body?
Well, what happened was it was really bad science. You know, there was a scientist at the University of Minnesota called Ansel Keys, who theorized that the rise in heart disease at the time was being caused by cholesterol, animal fat and cholesterol. And unfortunately, that theory has never been proven, and that theory arose after the Second World War. And even today, people still believe it, even though they've never proven it in science. So it just is something in.
So how does a theory, I mean, that just baffles me, that a theory that gets proposed post-World War II, mm-hmm. you know, what was it, the late 40s, maybe the early 50s, mm-hmm. and still has not been refuted effectively in the media today. I mean, 50 years later, people still believe it and still believe that cholesterol, I got to fight my cholesterol.
Right. Well, and cholesterol is your friend, not your enemy. And in terms of that's being dietary cholesterol. Dietary cholesterol is your friend, not your enemy. And measuring cholesterol levels in your body and thinking that high cholesterol has something to do with heart disease is another myth. But, you know, there are better markers for heart disease than cholesterol, absolutely. But at any rate, what happened was is Ansel Keys was a very charismatic individual, and the media really liked him. And so they actually featured him in the media on front covers of magazines and so on and said, oh, you know, he's figured it out. This guy has figured out the cause of heart disease. The fellow who was in the background who actually had the answer correct, and that was Professor John Yudkin, and he was saying it was sugar, our increased consumption of sugar that was causing the inflammation that was leading to the heart disease and so on. But he was a quiet and shy person. And, of course, second to that, you have the sugar lobby, which didn't want this information out. So, you know, the media basically cherry-picked who they wanted to feature in terms of this theory with regards to the rise in heart disease. And it's still a very pervasive belief system today, even though it's false.
Pam Colleen, our nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. When we come back after the news, we'll talk a little bit more about addictions and what's going on biochemically in the body. And then I'll get Pam's comments on two little news stories. Recently, last week, it was found omega-3 reduces anxiety in healthy youths. And today, the story out, comfort foods and the fatty acids and why they make us feel so good. I'll get Pam's comments on both of those stories, but also her take on addiction and in light of Amy Winehouse's death, why we see such a prominent rise in addictions, and maybe what we can do about it. What are we able to do? Maybe you're not addicted to anything. Maybe you think you're in fine mental shape, but maybe there's something you can do with your diet to make you even better. 10:28 is our time. My name's Tom McConnell. News is next here on News Talk 610 CKTV. 34 minutes after 10 o'clock, Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joins us on the program. Pam, I was just on, we just talked about your book. Listen to this email. Listen to this email I get from Diane. She goes, "Hi, Tom. I went to the Chapters at the Fairview Mall to buy Pam's book. Couldn't find it. They didn't have any there. Spoke to an associate and that she couldn't find it in their system. Thanks, Diane." So I'm like, well, you want your book sold, so I'll talk to Pam about it.
The other place to get it would be Amazon. They should have copies at Amazon, but I'll check with the store because I called them a couple of weeks ago and they had copies. And unless they're just lying off the shelf, then maybe they are sold out.
That's not a bad situation.
I'll have to come back and do another book signing.
All right. So Diane, just to make sure, Pam, and the last name is Killeen, K-I-L-L-E-E-N. And for more information on Pam's writings and her work, she has a website, pamkillen.com. So go to her website, but they should be there. Maybe they're sold out, Diane, but go to her website or go to Amazon. And then go through a search for Pam Colleen, and you'll find plenty of copies of the book. Pam, what are we lacking in our diet? We're lacking animal fats, I know, but what is it in the animal fats? What is it about the fats themselves? Because people are, as you say, so fat phobic, and they're like, "Oh, I don't want fat because I don't want to get fat." But what is it in those animal fats that our body needs, and that in the case of addiction, you went through, I mean, we'll go through adrenal glands and thyroid glands and your gut as well, but your brain, what are we not getting by not getting those fats?
Well, one of the things we're not getting enough of in our diet is cholesterol. I mean, we need cholesterol. It's the precursor to the formation of our hormones, for example, and it helps keep our cell membranes together. And really, you're only as healthy as your cell membranes. And so we need to make sure your cell membranes are put together properly. And some of the, there's some very key nutrients that help glue you together, so to speak. And one of them is cholesterol, dietary cholesterol. And unfortunately, because we're not getting enough cholesterol in the diet, essentially we're falling apart at the seams. The other thing would be things like arachidonic acid, which...
Hold on a second. Arachidonic acid.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to get the pronunciation right.
Yeah. And it's another crucial fatty acid that our bodies absolutely need in order to stabilize our mood. And then you talked earlier about the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, these are all important fats or components of fat that we need in order to feed our nervous system properly and form that cell membrane. So unfortunately, we're so fat phobic today, we're not getting enough of these nutrients. And as you mentioned earlier, there's even research today that you were reading in the paper that's talking about how these omega-3 fatty acids help improve our mood. And this is not new research. This has been known for a very, very long time. But people don't know where to get these omega-3 fatty acids. And in an ideal world, they should be coming from, wild fish, grass-fed meat, pastured eggs, all of these animal foods. And we're not, and unfortunately, because the animal foods today come from factory farm sources, we may not be getting enough of those omega-3 fatty acids.
So the best source, let's just say, for instance, if you can get an egg, that's great. But if you can get a free-range egg, that would be even better. If you can get some fish, it would be good. But if you can get wild salmon, that would be the ideal for something like omega-3s.
That's right. You want to start off with the concept of eating, your meal and surround, basically the focus of your meal should be in and around animal foods. High quality animal foods would be your gold standards, and these would be foods from local farmers where the animals are pasture fed, and where fish is concerned, it should be, if you can, get it wild. But you know what? If you can't quite get that gold standard, I don't want people to be hard on themselves either. It's just important to get those animal foods in your diet 3 times a day, just like we did, before World War II, when we sat down religiously and ate 3 square meals.
And one of the things that you're not giving people a license to do, though, is to eat all the fatty foods that you can. That oftentimes when we hear a message of, oh, feel free to eat animal fats, we often think that that means I can eat anything I want as long as, you know, you said eat fat, so I'm going to eat as much fat as possible. That's not the case, is it?
I think what if you can visualize the way we ate before World War II, we would have sat down and we would have had a piece of meat or a piece of chicken or whatever the case may be, and then had some vegetables with it, not a lot, but some vegetables with it. If you can visualize that type of meal, you know, think about your old black and white shows like Ozzie and Harriet, My Three Sons, those types of shows. You know, they would have sat down and ate those very wholesome meals. I just saw the movie Tree of Life, and the same type of meal planning was outlined in that movie, where the housewife made the meals from scratch. And I'm not trying to sound like a chauvinist here, it could be the guy too, of course, but you know, that she made every meal from scratch, and they sat down as a family and ate, you know, something that was centered around animal foods, and then some, maybe beans or salad or cooked broccoli or carrots or something like that. It's not a complicated scenario to draw up. Unfortunately, what I'm dealing with when I'm trying to teach people is the misinformation. You know, my classes are hours and hours and hours long, and it's really too bad that they have to be so long, but the biggest hurdle I have is to get through the misinformation that people are being fed about what is a healthy diet. And unfortunately, what most people perceive to be a healthy diet today is absolutely not healthy at all.
And do people still, I mean, is one of the biggest hurdles when we talk about healthy diet, the focus is health and diet on the waistline versus health of the whole body, that people are so preoccupied with losing those final 10 pounds that they're forgetting that all your food nourishes your whole body, including your hormonal system, your endocrine system, your nervous system, every other system that they forget about. That is that the big hurdle you face still?
Right. It's really a reflection of dieting and people thinking that they need to diet all the time, and that's really one of the leading risk factors for developing mood disorders, is to think that you need to diet, and because diet is synonymous with following a low fat type of food plan. And unfortunately, that you're right, Tom, that just sets people up for brain starvation. And you know, you really, this model of being skinny or thin for women, and again, this can be an issue for men, but this idea of being skinny or thin and that's somehow beautiful, this is just not natural for the human body.
It's one thing, and at the other end of the scale, I mean, people, well, if I'm not skinny, I'm going to be obese. No, that has its own problems in and amongst itself.
Right.
You know what?
Obesity. Obesity Journal published a couple of years ago and said that, you know, if you have a BMI of about 25, or on average, if you're about 20 pounds overweight, that you're actually healthier than somebody that weighs less than you. So please don't panic if you're within that 20-pound mark.
100 pounds overweight, and you may want to address some things in your lifestyle,
right,
but
I'm not
20 pounds overweight,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, 20 pounds overweight is not. Let me ask you, without giving away any patient secrets or disclosing any names, can you give us, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but can you give us a typical person who comes to you with, have you treated people, obviously you've treated people probably with mood disorders or addiction problems and some sort of mental challenges, I'll put it that way. How long does it take, and what do you do to address that if you see it in their diet? Like, how long does it take for someone to fully, I don't know what the better term is, to fully recharge, if you will?
Well, it can take a year, maybe even 2 years. But, you know, I work with some of the worst case scenarios imaginable, because they've been in and out of, you know, psychiatric hospitals or rehab centers and gotten absolutely nowhere. And one girl that I'm working with right now is a 17-year-old heroin addict, and she's also a cutter. The mother, I'm working closely with the mother, and she's got, you know, sort of a group of support for this young girl. And when I told this young girl, I said, listen, I'm going to help you with your biochemistry. I got to work with your nutrition. She responded so favorably to me because I was the only person dealing with her that didn't make her feel crazy. I said to her, this is a biochemical issue. You know, you can go to your talk therapies and work with your therapist, but I'm going to work with you to get you feeling more stable. And the mother was so happy with the girl's progress. I mean, she hasn't had any urges to cut She's sleeping at night now. She couldn't sleep before. She's not out of hot water yet, so there's no question about that. But this young woman really responds to me. She's doing incredibly well. Her mood is so much better. But it's just one of those type situations. This girl's been, she was in psychiatric hospital for a year and getting absolutely no results simply because they did not look at her nutrition.
So what did you identify with her and what did you modify to bring about such results?
Well, she's a carnivore. She's addicted to carbohydrates. I mean, she would sit down and eat a whole plate of any kind of bread products. So what I have her eating now, of course, is I have her focusing on eating red meat. I have her focusing on eating more butter, high-fat cheese, you know, chicken with the skin on, all of these traditional types of foods. And she's loving it.
Yeah, who doesn't love that diet? I mean, that's my diet. That's what I love. But it's interesting. I love that term, carbivore.
Yeah.
That you know what? That people, that carbs, because, well, I mean, they're so quickly, especially the processed carbs, so quickly converted from, you know, starches into sugars in our body. And it's like, yeah, no problem. But they're so nutritionally bereft of anything else but energy. I mean, that's it. There's nothing in there that our body can use other than then is energy. But I need to rebuild cells. I need to make connections. I need to heal. My body is always breaking down, so I always need to build it up. But the energy itself, that's not going to do it. I need things like protein and I need things like fat,
right,
where the amino acids and as the fatty acids can rebuild all my cells.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, young people today are being raised as carbivores. I mean, I have another young woman that just called me yesterday, and she can't even eat, Tom. She has a gag reflex every time she eats. And I know the reason, I know what's happening with her biochemically, because I see this quite a bit, where people feel sick when they eat. And you can imagine, that is just not a natural human response. There's something very wrong with the system when you're not being able to take down food. And so this poor girl, this other girl actually happens to be 17 as well, she took the initiative to contact me. And she's saying, you know, I can't go on the rest of my life like this.
Obviously not, yeah.
You know, and I have another young woman I'm working with in Australia who can't even leave her basement. She's too paranoid. She's on all sorts of medications. And she looks at the television set and thinks that, you know, they're talking to her. I mean, this poor woman is just absolutely crippled. And she's on, I don't know how many mind benders. But they know that, at least they know that this is not normal behavior, and they're looking for ways to get out of it. But unfortunately, in mainstream therapy, they don't look at nutrition, and they really need to start embracing it. I'm more than happy to train people in what I do, because I love what I do. I get to see people get well.
Yeah, that must be very satisfying. You know, it's every healthcare professional, they love the fact that you can help heal somebody, that you can help cure somebody. But you know what? It must be very satisfying to see the results you get and taking an approach that's different from other therapists, that looking at the basics, we are what we eat. And if you're not eating right, you're not going to be right.
No. And I do a lot of radio, and I invite, you know, the professors from the medical schools at the University of Western Ontario, whatever the case may be. I mean, I'm inviting them to come to my classes all the time. And to date, as far as I know, I've only had one professor from the medical school come to my class. And so it's really, you know I have a long uphill battle, and it's the David and Goliath type story. But you know what? With this healthcare system that we have that's imploding right now, and the mental disorders being on the rise, where are we headed, even our age group, Tom, where are our peers headed with regards to even Alzheimer's disease, when even the medical professionals, even our healthcare professionals are not embracing nutrition as much as they should, and even what they are teaching, of course, is just flawed because they're still embracing that low-fat lie.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. Quick break, and we got one segment left. I got a couple questions, but if you have a couple questions of Pam as well, she'll invite your questions. 905-688-2582, 1-877-610-2582, #610 on the Bell Mobility Network. Email McConnell at astral.com. 10:52 is our time. We got about 5 minutes left with Pam Colleen, our nutritional consultant, who joins us on Tuesdays. Pam, I don't know if this is a good question for you or maybe your family doctor, but you talk about cholesterol. So Hugo wants to know, what is a good blood cholesterol level then for a mid-40s male? What should he shoot for?
Well, you know, the thing to keep in mind is the numbers are really very arbitrary, and there's a book you can read called The Cholesterol Myths, and if you just Google in cholesterol myths, you'll find the book, and it's really just good to just start educating yourselves. If you go to even the Weston A. Price Foundation, which is WESTONAPrice.org, and you type in cholesterol myths, basically that will give you your answer with regards to the numbers. You know, the thing is that keep in mind that people with high cholesterol live longer than people with low cholesterol. So cholesterol is not the greatest marker for a predictor for heart disease or what have you. So, you know, there's so much politic. There's so many politics behind the cholesterol myth, behind statin drugs and so on. I mean, these drugs have devastating effects on people's health. The side effects are just horrible. And I'm going to be doing a show on this in an upcoming radio show on the statin drugs. I'm going to be bringing in experts who are critics of the statin industry. They're critics of the cholesterol myths. And if you want their names, if you want more information, I'm happy to send it out. In fact, on my website, I have a condensation. I have a one-page summary of where you can go to find out about this cholesterol hoax. And there's lots and lots of people coming forward and really just, you know, blowing the whistle on this campaign.
All right, let me see if I can do this. Is this Shane? How are you?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
You have a question for Pam?
I have a quick question, and yes, tell Patrick I'm sorry it took me 56 minutes to call in. Unfortunately, I am actually working today, unlike some people that just, you know, sit and answer phones and push buttons.
Right, exactly. Well, get going on your question. We're running out of time.
I have a quick question. I'm not sure if you're familiar with a lot of gastric bypasses that have been done. My wife went to Michigan and had a Roux-en-Y, which is a complete resectioning and moving of stuff for the stomach. She's on an almost complete high-protein diet.
Mm.
Unfortunately, she has also become anemic.
Mm.
When I took her down last night, she wanted to go down and just, you know, as a payback, because a few years ago when she had her back surgery, she was given a blood transfusion, and she wanted to pay back. It's been bothering her for quite a while. So I took her down to Red Cross last night to go and donate a pint of blood, and unfortunately she wasn't able to do it because she was so anemic. She can't eat a lot because her stomach is so small, so, you know, any type of vitamin substitutes or whatever that she can take, she can only take at certain points of the day, because she has to eat and then she has to wait a half an hour and then be able to drink and, you know, so on. So she's in this bit of a circle. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions or anything else that we can do to try and bring her red blood count back up a little bit higher to, ooh, you know?
Difficult question to answer, simply because there's so many issues at large with regards to the procedure that's been done on her.
Okay.
On a healthy person, what I would say is, you know, high protein diets are not very healthy. I mean, I work with people who are in the bodybuilding industry who come to me on, you know, that have been on high protein diets, and they have a lot of health issues. What our bodies really fundamentally need first and foremost are the animal fats, and then protein, and then carbohydrates. And to absorb the minerals, your body needs animal fats. And so when people are on a high-protein diet, that tells me she's not eating enough animal fat and therefore not having the catalysts that are necessary for her to absorb the minerals.
And
even the protein, for that matter.
Certainly. She's getting a lot of the leafy greens. She's, you know, getting in eggs mixed in with the salad, getting in, you know, a lot of red meat. Not, and I don't mean a lot. I'm talking if you were to take a deck of cards and cut it in half, that's about the amount of protein per sitting that she can get in.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing the chicken, she's doing the fish, and she's doing the red meat.
Good.
But we still can't.
As long as it's the focus is on that they're fatty and not lean. We never would have eaten lean meat historically.
No, but unfortunately a lot of greasy foods and stuff, they do make her ill. So, and the,
yes,
carbohydrates are one of the last things that she can intake.
Good.
Not because of her diet, but because she physically, if she takes in carbohydrates, she does get sick from them. She'll, you know.
Yeah, no, I see that a lot. People with very weak digestion cannot handle a lot of vegetables even. You know, and if they eat any vegetables at all, they need to be cooked.
Yes.
Shane, I just got to leave it there. I'm so sorry that we're just out of time. It's a fascinating question, though, isn't it?
Yeah, people with such a... we see this a lot, and you know, we have done so much damage to our digestive systems today, and you know, it's really a shame. It shouldn't be like this, but there is lots people can do to repair the digestion. I don't have enough time to get into it. I teach an entire class on digestion.
Sounds like we could do a show on digestion then.
We can do a whole show on digestion. My class is coming up in London on November 5th, and it's called Simple Solutions for Bad Digestion. But my nutrition boot camp I teach throughout the month of October as well, and try to get to some of the root causes of a lot of these problems.
Pam, always a pleasure. We'll talk next Tuesday.
That would be wonderful. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant. For more information, go to pamcolleen.com or send me an email, and I'll send you the link if you don't have a pen with you right now. Anyway, Rick Fleming is next with the news. And speaking of not getting enough food and then too much food, I have a weight loss challenge where there's a challenge, and also helping out the people in and around Somalia during a famine. What do you think the best way to help them out is? How do we help them out in the short term and in the long term? 10:59 is our time. My name's Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV.